are only targeting criminals around him who are committing crimes that are causing social and economic suffering in the country in order to bring them to justice. As soon as we have accomplished our mission, we expect that the situation will return to normalcy.
Capital 263. Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
My name is Upenyu Makoni Matenga.
And I am Tawanda Henry Beatty. And welcome to the best political podcast in a new Zimbabwe.
Is it a new Zimbabwe?
Stay tuned. We've got all the answers or more questions. But yes,
regardless,
very exciting episode coming up. I suppose exciting times in the country, or interesting rather. What do we have for the listeners today, guys?
Yeah, so today is the 16th of November, and as you heard in the intro there, back there, that was a statement that was on air yesterday, the 15th of November. So where there was a coup, not a coup, in Zimbabwe. It's not a coup officially, but that's what we'll be discussing today. We'll be looking at, you know, the events that took place over the past week, so to speak, culminating in yesterday, and then looking at, you know, possible outcomes, some of the discussions that are taking place, and some of the fringe issues, what other people are saying, and, you know, how this actually plays out for Zimbabwe in locally and internationally as well. And yes, what else is there?
That's pretty much it. I think we'll keep it single issue focused, because talking about anything else right now seems a bit ridiculous.
Redundant.
Yeah.
Though it seems government business is just, you know, carrying on as usual.
Some extent. I mean, if the Herald is urging civil servants to come to work, then I think turnout so far has been low, which is understandable given the situation.
Yeah.
It's not every day there's a tank in facing, you know, Kaguvi building, for instance.
That's true. So,
a timeline of this coup. So on 18 April 1980, Robert Mugabe was declared the winner of the first Zimbabwean elections. I thought ngatinyaso dzoke paka zvakanyaso tangira zvinhu zvese. And that day will forever be called Independence Day. And it was the 15th of November for me, because I'm 10 hours ahead of you guys.
So 14 November for the real world, which is Zimbabwe.
No, yes. What happened? What are you talking about?
For Freedom Day.
Oh, no. It's the 15th, because the statement was made at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. So it's the 15th.
So, yeah. But actually, to go into our
timeline. So in between those two dates, a lot happened. And for our listeners from the podcast, I think you would know that probably the events that set this whole thing in motion were the Interface rally in Blueo and Grace's Meet the Churches at Rufaro Stadium, and then the subsequent sacking of the vice president, Emmerson Dambudzo, ED, the next day. So, and then his subsequent, you know, we thought he had fled. I suppose he had fled for his safety. And I'll be the first to admit that I was wrong. I called it's the end of Lacoste, amongst other things. I think I even called him a coward. But since then, I've been proven wrong. So yeah, those are pretty much the two events that set this thing in motion. When Comrade Simon Kayemoyo read a very brief statement from the president announcing the vice president's firing from the office of the vice president presidency. What happened after that?
Yeah, we then came to this past Monday where General Chiwenga, commander of the Defense Forces, issued a statement stating that the situation within ZANU-PF was causing anxiety in the public. It was affecting the economy, and that ZANU-PF should stop, or members, people within ZANU-PF should stop the purges. That this was against the revolution that they fought for, and that if the situation was not contained within ZANU-PF, if purges didn't continue, then the army would step in to rectify the situation and create stability. You then had on the Tuesday, the 14th, Comrade Chipanga of the ZANU-PF Youth League.
No, he's now Mr. Chipanga.
He no longer has the right to be called or answered.
No,
to
Comrade. It's part of the timeline, ka.
Oh, okay. At the time he was Comrade Chipanga.
Part of the timeline. We haven't gotten to the events yet. It's part of the timeline. Anyway, so Comrade Chipanga comes out and he basically says, "Well, no, this is undemocratic. General Chiwenga, this is treason. We won't stand for it. We are the Youth League. We are the vanguard of the party. In fact, General Chiwenga, you and ex-VP Mnangagwa stole $15 billion diamond money." And this was their statement. Around 5 o'clock, we see a statement issued, though not read, coming from SK Moyo, stating again similar things, that this was tantamount to treason, the statement that General Chiwenga had issued the day before. And then rumors started circulating, not rumors. There were tanks, army tanks seen on certain roads, and then messages started circulating that the army had taken control of ZBC. This was around about 10 p.m. Zimbabwean time.
Yeah,
10 p.m.
10
p.m. Because the message that went around was that there will be a press conference at 11 p.m.
Yeah. And then, you know, folks went to bed. Nothing happened. At 4 o'clock in the morning, Zimbabwean time, the national broadcasters, both ZBC and all the national radios, started broadcasting General Chiwenga's statement from Monday, and previously they hadn't done so. There was complete media blackout for General Chiwenga's Monday statement. Soon after that, there were two army officials on TV, Major General Sibusiso Moyo and Air Vice Marshal Jacob Njede. And Major General Moyo read out a statement in which they made it clear that the military was coming in to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in the country. It is not a takeover of government. They said the president and his family was safe, that they were only targeting criminals who were around the president, who were committing crimes, causing this social and economic suffering, and that once they'd accomplished their mission, it will go back to normalcy. This is all in what you heard when we played at the beginning. And so Zimbabweans woke up to their country under military curatorship, though not a coup.
That's a nice way of putting it, curatorship.
I couldn't find it.
It sounds like judicial management.
It's court mandated.
Judicial mandated.
Yeah, but that's basically it. The events, I suppose.
And Upenyu, where were you at 4 a.m. on the 15th, the morning of the 15th of November?
I can tell you exactly where I was. I was drooling on my pillow, enjoying my sleeps, only to be... I actually woke up at 5:30, hey? And, you know, to the news that there was a statement playing on ZBC. I think by then it had played over and over a couple of times by Major General Moyo, saying that the army was not a coup. The military was just going to remove a few criminals surrounding the president. So, you know, like any good citizen, I stayed myself at home because it's safer there. You don't know what's going to happen in a military, not a coup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The not a coup joke is something we probably should address from the outright. I'm quite confident in calling it a coup. I think when power is seized de facto in this scenario, in fact, there's actually an academia term for it. This is a Guardian coup. Or for me to butcher another language, there's a Spanish term, pronunciamiento, a pronouncement, which is actually used to happen very often in Latin American countries, where when the civilian government became unpopular, the military, the barracks would come out and pronounce that they've taken power and handed over eventually to another civilian government. So it's a coup. It's a type of coup, just like there's different types of meat. But at the end of the day, you're not a vegan. We're not vegans.
No. This is definitely a coup. It fits all the things that you need for it to be a coup. You had a military man on TV. You had the message playing over and over again for about 5 or 6 hours so that everyone gets to hear it. You have military at the airport, so they're clearly manning the situation there. The airports are operating, but they certainly have control and determine to some degree who gets in and who gets out. Maybe not directly, but certainly indirectly. You also have the military allegedly arresting individuals, which the police are the ones who have arresting powers, but their duties have been suspended. So apparently a few of our ministers have been arrested. Minister Chombo is one of them. There was a shootout
only
at his
officially confirmed minister that would be arrested. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There was a shootout at his residence. And I'm sure some of you must have seen the pictures circulating with a sheet.
It's a car cover. Minister, I don't know about you guys. I've never had a car that needed to be covered under a sheet. But Cisco Chombo had such a nice vehicle at his house that they had to cover it under Jira. You know, Egyptian cotton saw.
But it's yeah,
under a sheet, guys.
So,
can we talk about the logic,
of
the military saying that it's not a coup? Because I think that's equally as important as it being a coup, which is that President Mugabe is still, in effect, the president, although he has not had the ability to freely leave his house or the ability to make decisions that are, you know, pertaining to executive decisions in the country. And in large part, the reason why we're at what appears to be an impasse right now is because they require President Mugabe's I don't know, cooperation, I suppose, to be able to effect whatever it is the rest of the plan was when they, you know, deployed soldiers all over. It's actually all over the country, not just Harare. So there is some logic to not calling it a coup right now and only limiting it to being in military intervention.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it, is that they've made it clear, and General Chiwenga made it clear in his statement, that this is not specifically about President Mugabe, but about a succession issue and where the power was tilting towards. It was tilting towards Grace Mugabe and the rest of G40. And their side, the Lacoste side, was on the out. You know, there are rumors that General Chiwenga himself had been fired on his return from China, and he basically said no. But this is a power struggle amongst elites, which makes it, as you said, a Guardian coup, because it's not a military taking over in order for them to govern, I don't think. I don't think they are interested in the business of governing the state. I think they are just interested in making sure that they have elites who they support on that side. They clearly had no agenda with the G40 side of things, and they would rather it be with somebody that they know and they trust and who can support their interests. I said yesterday that this coup is not about removing ZANU-PF from government. In fact, it is guaranteeing it's perpetuating its existence in the state and its control over the state.
Yes.
Yeah. Another aspect as to why you wouldn't call it a coup is unconstitutional. The sort of parameters of her Guardian coup is that the military is still operating within the constitutional mandate of protecting the country. A broad interpretation given, but at the end of the day, it doesn't destroy the country's constitution. It doesn't set a precedent for unconstitutional rule. And what it then allows is whoever the next government to take over has legitimacy, not only in the eyes of Zimbabweans, but importantly in the eyes of the world. And what both ED and General Chiwenga know is that this will not be successful if the world does not buy in and if money does not begin to flow into Zimbabwe. Because what really needs to be done is the economy needs to be fixed to ensure the survival of ZANU-PF outside of the succession issues. So by calling it a coup, you then invite African Union and SADC and intervention, and even all the way up until up to the UN. Because there's international law and there's domestic laws against an illegal seizure of power. Currently, the line that they're taking, very educated, very smart, very well tailored, is even in their statements. They have not, perhaps besides the arresting or detention of ministers, have not actually overstepped their constitutional mandate as the final line of defense of the Zimbabwean constitution. I mean, it's obviously an argument that people can have backwards and forwards, but in terms of what the conversation and what they're trying to portray to the world, that's why they will never call it a coup.
I think that's a plausible argument. They're making. It's a very plausible one.
I think, for me, this was well orchestrated. It was very well tailored. Their message addressed everyone. They addressed the judges. They addressed the public. They addressed judges. They addressed parliament. They addressed churches. They spoke to all of the critical groups, I think, that you need to speak to, how each one then chooses to interpret the message and chooses to react is quite interesting. They also put this message out early in the morning before people got up and went to work. It would have been pandemonium if it was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, because everyone would have panicked and how do I get home? Where are my kids? Do I get them out of school? But no, everyone woke up to this message that was, you know, being played. Everyone was telling each other, turn on ZBC, turn on the radio, listen to what's happening, and you decide, do I go to work? Do I not go to work? Some people went to work. There were people in town. There was no, from what I understand, there wasn't, although there was tension, there were no problems. So it was well executed from that part. However, going forward, it's been over 24 hours now, and we've only had that message. We don't have anything else to suggest that there are, you know, something is coming. It seems that they are at an impasse based on some of the rumors that we are hearing. There's uncertainty, and uncertainty breeds anxiety.
I think at this point, Zimbabweans are familiar with this type of uncertainty. Remember in 2008, where it took, what was it, 3 months for the election results to be finally released, such as they were. And so I think the average Zimbabwean has sort of, I know I have, sort of settled into, okay, well, now let's just wait and see what's going to happen. Because the alternative is not that much more palatable than, you know, a military government is not palatable, but neither is going back to the way things were. So we're sort of waiting to see if there is going to be some sort of transitional arrangement and what the governance arrangements are going to be like. But otherwise it really is business as usual.
Yeah. So let's get to the speculation. I think you mentioning 2008 sort of is very good, because, you know, in 2008 the military stepped in a large way, much more behind closed doors, and guaranteed the rule of the continued rule of Mugabe. And, you know, 9 years or however long later, it seems the same people are stepping in to effectively end his rule. So there's, a poetic symmetry to that. But in terms of the symmetry, in terms of the speculation, sorry, what's coming next? Are we going to have a military government where, General Chiwenga decides him, Sibanda, Air Marshal Phiri, are now in charge, and they will run the country with a committee of sorts? Will former Vice President Emmerson come, former government, and run the country until 2018, where we shall have elections? Will we have a broader transitional authority, which will have people from all walks of life, Machich, the army, opposition, and it'll have a longer mandate, maybe 5-10 years, while they stabilize the economy? And then once they say they've stabilized the economy, then they'll say, oh, now we have to create a fair playing field for elections. I don't know. What do you guys think is going to happen?
Chris,
or
you want to go first?
What are people saying, yeah, actually, as well?
I can go first. I think that we're going to see a situation where delay in the headphones. Anyway, where Emmerson Mnangagwa comes out as the leader. Ultimately, I think that's what's going to happen. Whether or not we're going to have a coalition of sorts or a transition group with opposition members, I'm not too certain about. I think it would perhaps work to the advantage of some people, but at the same time, I wouldn't advise opposition members to quickly agree to doing so.
Has been reported that Mnangagwa is in Zimbabwe and currently at Manyami Air Base. It was reported yesterday on ZBC. So, you know, and also the alliance between Chiwenga and Mnangagwa is quite, it's an open secret. We all know that this exists.
They're bros.
So, and I do not believe Chiwenga. Yeah, they're bros. Bros before Mugabe and Hose, right? So,
bros before what? Are you bros calling former first lady?
First of all, Dr. she's not my... former anything. Mugabe is still the president of our republic until such time as he himself
but surely,
resigned.
Do you think their marriage would have survived this? Nikuda zvinhu zvinoita Grace Mudara.
Eh, kando. Okuda zvinhu zvacho.
I don't baba mapera, you know, baba like, mapera, ndikendini zvangu.
Ah, she's not your ordinary hoe, bruh.
Yeah.
So,
no, look, but to everyone, the sexism came from Upenyu. So, please give. I am a feminist.
I apologize to all card-carrying feminists.
Okay, I was lost there for a moment.
Where did you go?
Something happened with the mechanics of the situation, and no, I just got
guy,
lost out.
This guy is just making sure, just in case Grace bounces back, he wasn't involved in a slander.
I actually have no, seriously, like it stopped recording on my end. So Henry, you have to.
Yeah, okay, you're on your own, fine. Henry.
Yeah, but anyway, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, I've forgotten what I was saying now. So yes, but saying, bros before Mugabe and Hose.
You were saying. No, you were saying that Emmerson was at Manyami.
Oh, yes. And so the transitional arrangement that will result from this coup, not a coup, is more than likely to involve Emmerson Mnangagwa, and particularly because it comes after the firing of Mnangagwa. And, you know, there's been a constant reiteration, even on ZBC, of the fact that Liberation War veterans and people with Liberation War credentials are the only ones who can govern this country. And so I'm interested to see what a transitional arrangement will look like. If it has Mnangagwa as president, who is going to be vice president, who is going to be in the cabinet, how long will it last? Because for me, 5 years is too long a time frame. The GNU itself was too long a time frame, and we, the Zimbabwean people, didn't get anything from that was useful, other than a brand new constitution, which again, the utility of which is debatable. So
stabilize the economy.
Yeah, some people did it. Some people argue that the GNU was actually, you know, some people say that are quite upset at what's the guy's name? Jealousy Mawarire for going to the courts and ordering elections to take place. Some people wanted the GNU to continue long beyond, you know, because also in retrospect, the last 5 years were worse than the 5 years of the GNU.
Yes. But the problem with a GNU is that it's not a permanent arrangement. It is not intended to be a permanent arrangement.
That's true.
And if the economy can go from good to horrible in a matter of months, then how sustainable was the economic bounce back that we experienced? So, you know, as a person, I want to see a government that is stable, because quite frankly, I don't care who's stealing money. I just don't want to feel that they're stealing money. Do you see what I'm saying there? And I don't care who's president. I just want to be able to do the things that I need to be able to do. So this is where I'm saying that it needs to be a sustainable. I do not want to be interested in who's up for succession. I want to be interested in going to work and doing my daily things. But the reason why we are so interested and so tuned into what is going on is because we are crippled to the point of having to ask, but who's in charge? And so that needs to be, it does need to be changed. And it, if we are going to be going into a GNU or NTA, that arrangement needs to be long enough to fix things, but short enough for us to be able to get to the next election, if we are going to have elections, and have a permanent arrangement that works for the citizens, not just the ruling elite.
So one of the things you mentioned there was the war veterans. And interestingly enough, you know, obviously state media's narrative has changed, the editorial policy has changed, but guys like Mahia and Matema Danda, who were considered rebels and to have been expelled from ZANU-PF yesterday, Ruben Barwe was referring to them as the legitimate war veterans, you know. And it's interesting to see, you know, this immediate change of narrative. Obviously, the army or the military is in control of the media currently. You also had Chipanga, Mr. Chipanga now, though he's still comrade, he's still the leader of the youths. But he came out and he made a very public apology yesterday, saying that he, that his statements were wrong, that he just got a message from some guy, Anonzi Rodney Dangarembizi, who...
That sounds like the most made-up name.
So this guy is actually, you know, he says Ndakapiwa na Dangarembizi. He is a real guy. And yeah, interestingly about this Dangarembizi guy, so he's an alleged G40 member, but he's one of the guys who was in the organizing committee, the director of the organizing committee for Grace Mugabe's birthday parties, or, yes, you know, their fundraising events as well. So he organizes those things. And also, when ED allegedly gave that report, the counter report to the one Anna Prof Moyo gave in Politburo,
yeah,
one of the things he said was that Dangarembizi tried to recruit Major General Trust Mugova to G40. Major General Trust Mugova is the chief of staff for the Zimbabwe National Army. And apparently him and Dangarembizi are acquaintances or friends or something. And Dangarembizi tried to recruit this guy with promises of making him CDF. Obviously, this didn't work because subsequently we've seen that G40 clearly had no military support, which to me makes no sense why they'd be doing all the things they were doing without any muscle, especially when the Youth League were crying kuti tikwate, and then in 24 hours they're apologizing. So,
but Chris,
so it... Yep.
You answered your own question. G40 were doing all they were doing because they didn't have military support. They needed to take power quickly before anything like this happened. They needed to be in complete control so that no one could counter it. Do you understand? Like, they needed to do it really quickly.
No, but the thing is, right, is yes, you need to be in control, but do you have control if you don't have the military? So they had political control, yes, of the cabinet and of Mugabe, but at the end of the day, they weren't sure whether that was enough. Yes, Mugabe is commander-in-chief, but there is the fact that, you know, CDF himself can say, Aiwaka, as commander of the army, we have gone the wrong direction and last line of defense. So they didn't have that. So
maybe
how
they were banking on Mugabe's, you know, quashing a military coup, not a coup. And maybe they were banking on, because you, in the statements released by Mnangagwa and even the one with Chiwenga, they keep reiterating Mugabe as the president, head of state, and commander-in-chief of the defense forces, the both of them. And, you know, again, the silence is about Mugabe either cooperating or not cooperating. So ultimately, having Mugabe in your, you know, playing to whatever tune it is that you're playing on, you know, he's the trump card.
Guys,
basically,
this
is what I'm saying.
This was a game of inches. It was literally a 24-hour thing. The mistake that they made was in allowing Emerson to be fired while Chiwenga was out of the country. That was the only mistake.
Or Chiwenga should have been here.
Because if Chiwenga had been here and he had been fired as well, along with with the vice president or had been neutralized by being arrested or whatever, then it would be a different story, essentially. I mean, it would probably be a more violent story, because if you can see someone like Cisco having his my guards fight back and lose their lives over, you know, the you know, piece of work he is, like, you know, who would want to put their life on the line for that? But now imagine someone who's as well respected generally as General Chiwenga, and how difficult it would have been to remove him from his home. But so the I think it was a lot closer. This was a lot closer. It, you know, the coin fell to the Lacoste side, but I think this was a lot closer than people, you know. I think retrospectively, as time goes on, we'll see Kuti Chinichika, it was very close. The mistake was
Chiwenga
had been taken at the airport or had been not allowed to come back into the country. We might be talking a different story right now.
That's true. I mean, they gave them time to organize and things like that. Also, is they send Chipanga to make such a ridiculous statement soon after the military has clearly taken a position.
Chipanga was clearly afraid when he made that statement.
You honestly think Chipanga has the smarts to sit down and write that long ass statement that he put out?
No, but of course he doesn't have the smarts for anything. I don't think Chipanga can spell his own name.
And then also you have, the thing is, for me, is guys like Prof Moyo, you know, and we haven't spoken about him, but he was so smart.
I wanted just to save time for Prof Moyo, because he deserves his own 5 minutes.
You know,
that's why.
But
I think that guy needs his own episode.
He was so smug when Chiwenga made the statement, you know. He posted a tweet at Kungo Wukura Wukura Istiri Zete Takavata. And now he's clearly, you know, while he was asleep, the country was being stolen from him.
Blaz, please.
But was this after he tried the U.S. embassy? Because the Blue Roof is further from town.
No, okay, he was close to the Blue Roof. I think the U.S. Embassy thing may have been a bit of
an exaggeration.
He lives quite close to the Blue Roof.
You know, no one has asked this key question, and I'm wondering why. Why does Ignatius Chombo have Israeli guards? Why?
Sure, when you have millions of dollars that you stole and you need to keep them secure, you hire car people to do so.
But are they independent contractors?
Yeah.
Obviously. Are they, you know, who are these people?
No, but Upenyu, I think you also realize that these people were receiving their own information. I think it might not have been a long-term arrangement. I think perhaps... all of these, because it wasn't just Chombo's house that they was shooting at. A close friend of mine lives close to Kasukwere and was reporting they were shooting at his house as well.
But does Kasukwere have Israeli guards? No,
I don't know. I'm saying all we know about is Chombo, but I'm saying these guys would not have known that something could happen, so they would also have been at a heightened sense of security, which is why it doesn't make sense that you send Chipanga or you tweet Kutisu Zete Takarara, because any person would generally have told you maybe you should be. But then again, I guess they were like us, because in our last episode, Chris, we had written off Lacoste.
That's true. The thing is, I honestly thought that you know, like Mujuru, his folks would abandon him, but clearly General Chiwenga, you know, stood up, and it definitely goes deeper. Of course, they were threatened in their personal capacity, but also it's really one of those where that entire generation of people was going to be out. And now it looks like they've definitely been given a lifeline. And to be fair, though, Mchangwa did come to bat for him as well. You know, the other war veterans did come to bat for Ed. So
Mliswa as well. Let's not forget
AC AC Lumumba is coming to bat. He wants to be Minister of Youth. He's stated it clearly. But yeah,
God
yeah,
help
let's not get into that. But you know, this is a question though, is what does this coup mean for our democracy overall? Did we even have a democracy? You know, people are But a lot of people I've seen are quite, there is a sort of, I want to say not euphoria, but to that extent, there is some sort of relief that people have.
There's because a buzz. Definitely, there's a feeling in the air.
There's a buzz. Because they see this as an end of a Mugabe era. For a lot of people, that is huge. And I think, you know, whether you support ZANU-PF or not, because really this is, you know, or support Mnangagwa or not, some people, for just to see the end of Mugabe, that is so huge. And we've seen democratic practices fail to remove him. 2008 is a clear example of that. So for some people, this is the only way it would happen. It looked like 2018 elections, really, as things stand, there was no hope that the opposition was capable of doing so because of how fractured it was. But whether we get a situation where we then get back to you know, to clear processes, democratic processes, is a huge question. Because if the army then puts their own man and puts Mnangagwa and says we're going to elections next year, they're not going to, if people vote for the opposition, I honestly don't see the army saying, well, okay, this is what the people chose. No, they've already put their man and they've chosen their man, and they're clearly showing that they are the ones who hold the trump card and may end up being kingmakers.
I think that in terms of whether or not this is a real democracy, I was talking to a person who voted in the 1980 election earlier, and for them, they remember being forced to vote for ZANU-PF. So I do not, when has Zimbabwe ever really seen a democratic election, I think is a good question, like a proper democratic election. And then the second question is that in as much as there's a sense of elation and euphoria, we are running into the tendency of assuming that a handing over of power from Mugabe to somebody else is democracy, which it is not. Because remember that our nation is still in its infancy. We're only 37, turning 38 just now. And we still have a lot to learn. Our institutions are still weak, case in point, the coup, not a coup. And we still are trying to understand who we are, even as Zimbabweans. So it's not simply just that Mugabe must go, but Mugabe must go and be replaced by something that is better, and ultimately that keeps the Zimbabwean people and their welfare in mind. Because you cannot have a country that boasts a literacy rate, and yet at the same time, there are people who are unable to access education simply because the, you know, the facilities or the teachers are not being paid, or the facilities are not good enough, and issues like that. So I think we ourselves have to take a look at what it is, because this does provide us with a moment in which we can examine what it is that we aspire to be and where our place in that future is and how we will get there, and then to work towards that.
I tend to agree with both of you. But I mean, obviously, we need to stress to everyone listening that this wasn't about Zimbabwe. It wasn't about Zimbabweans. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with the fact that you are lining up every day for your cash. They didn't care. It had nothing to do with the fact that you've got potholes in the road. They didn't care. It had nothing to do with the fact that your grandmother can't access medicine in the hospital. They didn't care. It had the fact to do everything to do with the fact that it was going to be Grace who takes over and not Emerson. That's when they cared. So let's not think that these guys are benevolent. But there's a type of selfishness that works. There's a type of wanting to keep power that can work. There's the Kagame type of wanting to keep power. There's the Chinese Communist Party way of wanting to keep power that can work for a country. And I think the conversation that we're having, and I think, Ubenyu, you said it yourself, you said post this, we need to understand what kind of country we are, who we are. And I think that question needs to even, and as unpalatable it is as it is coming from my mouth, I almost want to spit the words out. We need to consider if we even want to be a democracy, or what that means in a Zimbabwean context. Because it's also a foundational part of the country. And we can't say that we've been one in the truest sense of the word, but we can't also say that we haven't been one, because we've seen situations where people will speak of 2008, and fair enough, Mugabe refused to give up power. But if you remember, ZANU-PF didn't have a majority in parliament. They actually lost parliament. Yes. So there was 5 years, there was a whole time where the ruling party was actually the minority party in parliament.
It was 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. But you've had situations, and then the by-elections happened, but you've also had situations prior to that where I think after 2005, the MDC had about 77 seats, which allowed, you know, the parliament to function in a truly democratic way. And as far as that, you know, for any laws to be passed, there had to be bipartisan support for the law. And that saw some decent reforms and some laws being passed. So you know, I don't think it's fair to ask whether Zimbabwe is a democracy, because there are certainly democratic practices in place. And I think every Zimbabwean believes in the notion of voting. Whether they want to go and do it or not, I don't think any Zimbabwean wants to have their votes taken away from them, whether they decide to exercise it or not. But at the same time, is that what we should be going forward, given the options that are on the table for us right now? Because it's almost,
I think
it was Grace, Emerson or Tsvangirai, and one has to, from my perspective, I obviously know who I would have voted for, but I know for a lot of people on the ground, it was a very tough choice to make, because, you know, a lot of people can be idiots, but, you know, it's okay.
Wow.
But
I definitely think at this stage it really is about thinking, you know, what kind of country we're going to have. I think for a lot of people, what it really comes down to is whoever comes in, you know, be it through the ballot or be it as it is now through the gun, is that the economy is put at the top of the agenda. For me, one of the things that I want us to be clear on, though, is how we get rid of leaders. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, the military comes in and brings us new leadership. But if that leader fails, do we have to go back to the military process again? It's how do we frame how do we frame those processes, and what are those processes? That's all I want us to be clear on coming out of this. Obviously, we'll have more information in the coming days. Hopefully they wrap up soon, because it's the wait makes people very nervous. It makes me nervous, because Dongoziwo kutisha ndiani, what's happening? And please, can they not bring back Mugabe and Grace? Please, Akumana. Even if they try put them ceremonial or chichichi, please let them not. I know they like them very much, but hey, or at least they like Mugabe. Maybe not Grace, but Asha, no.
I just wanted to say, I know you want to wrap up. So very quickly, that alternatives exist. And if we're saying that at the top of our national agenda is the economy, then instead of just, you know, saying let's look east, then let's really look east, because alternatives to what we have now really do exist. China is an alternative. It's not a democracy in the sense in the Western style, but it works. And, you know, somewhere I read that China was creating 2,000 new millionaires every year, which I'm sure Zimbabwe would like to at least create one new millionaire every year. So, again,
besides Winkler,
we really need to think about what is it that we want. Yes,
hey, weak man, Gasunga Romano.
Can he take back the money?
ZNA, please. ZNA, ZNA.
And I'm not a Tora Munu.
Watch you anger, please. Move a mamisa pa TV, Ramanga itachi, anger, please.
I know why Dingo lens it, Mdara. Qualinini. My lens is ZBC.
He can't help what he looks like, you guys. He can help stealing, but he can't help what he looks like.
He could actually go to the gym, hey.
Oh! You know,
you go to jail, come out looking like Gucci man.
But guys who are pot belly themselves, don't think assault. I haven't seen you on Facebook. Anyway, alternatives exist, and so we need to explore those alternatives, because if we're saying that we want anyone other than Mugabe, and if we're saying that we just want things to work, then maybe the best thing, as opposed to having a coup every 37 to 40 years when people are too old, maybe the best thing is to just say, okay, Chitai, but make it so that it works for us.
Yeah, definitely. I think at the end of the day, look, we need to unite as people and make the most out of whatever opportunities happening right now. Because I genuinely believe the more united and the more coherent we are, the more likely we are to be listened to. And yeah, you know, if you're a Christian, pray. If you're not a Christian, send not a Christian Muslim or religion. Talk to the universe. But yeah, also register to vote, because I think if we don't slow down registering to vote, people will get the message that we still want our election.
Yes.
So yeah, if you can register to vote. And
oh, yes,
yeah,
registration is still happening. Yeah, registration is still happening.
Stay safe.
Quick interesting thing that I've seen here now is former Zimbabwean Finance Minister Tendai Biti says there's no need for SA businesses and investors to panic about the unfolding political change in Zimbabwe. He's reassured investors that the army currently in control of the needs of business. That's on SABC News Online.
So Tendai Biti is saying that people must be reassured.
Yeah, I think he's just reassuring people, Gureisha, please don't take your money out the country.
No. I think that's a message we should all get behind.
Is he working with the not a coups? Is this what it...
No. I honestly...
He's a Zimbabwean who cares about Zimbabwe, and I think that right now all patriots need to get behind this new dispensation to ensure that it's a success and judge it for its merits once it comes to light.
Also, please, the outside community that goes for journalists and other international communities, anyone listening to this, please stay out of it, because the last time you guys sent us a Thabo Mbeki, we all know what happened. There is no crisis in Zimbabwe, Mbeki. So, Shad, this time...
Quiet diplomacy, Mbeki.
Don't be bitter.
No, this time we want to deal with our own problems, Shad, because...
Let me put on the tag, Akuno. It's okay.
South Africa does know how to deal with us. Saka.
Please don't listen to the diasporans. That's, you know, don't listen to the diasporans.
What
they live a good life.
What are you saying?
What I'm saying is that... we need SADC and the AU to legitimize this process.
No. I agree with...
If it's not a process that will ultimately benefit the Zimbabwean people, then they have every right not to legitimize this process.
No.
Yes, I agree with you about Thabo Mbeki. That was a rubbish mediation.
Listen, Upenyu, you literally changed my mind in a sentence, eh?
No, I completely
You actually
agree
changed
with
my mind in a sentence. You spoke so much sense, Deka.
Let me qualify. They need to legitimize, but they don't need to influence the process.
Okay.
It needs to be a process which the Zimbabwean people take charge of, and or
well,
at that level,
masters of science, political student of Chevening Scholarship, Zimbabwe.
We've just agreed that the Zimbabwean people are not at the heart of this process. No one is thinking about us.
Fair enough. And you think that SADC. You think that SADC is thinking about us, these same people who have gone time and time again to say that there are free and fair elections in Zimbabwe? Of course not. These guys, it's a boys club that supports Mugabe. It's a boys club that have come from Hondo together.
Absolutely.
All of them for themselves.
What I'm banking on is that the boys club is tired of the Zimbabwean situation and they're tired of the Mugabe problem. And I'm banking on the boys club saying to Mugabe,
but they'll never be tired, because if they allow this to happen in Zimbabwe, what's to stop Zuma being removed?
Exactly. It'll happen in their own countries.
They don't want it to happen like this.
Exactly. They don't. They want a situation that guarantees that when they need Zimbabwe to, when they need to call on Zimbabwe to support the things they're doing in their countries, Zimbabwe will do so. The only person who could actually say something of substance would be Ian Khama in Botswana, because he's always taken a position.
But he's stepping down.
He's the perfect person because he's no longer a president. He can actually spend time mediating in Zimbabwe.
When Mugabe won't open the door for Ian Khama.
You see, so there is
nice people of his sexual proclivity in his house Burani, all the time. He must Burani, just let it happen.
Gachi Burane and then Sadek says on the outcomes whether it's a proper arrangement or not, and then we deal with it there. But Kanawagura also pindira, I'm against
no,
that.
No, if there's bloodshed, Sadek should certainly intervene. If there's...
Atidiku.
All right, so guys, where can people find you online? Yeah.
This is my kingdom.
President,
I'm going to reshuffle the both of you. I'll be putting out a statement pretty soon. You'll see.
Yes, and as you said, I support you. Vice President Christo Mogu eject Aega.
Manje, I'll be calling in military reinforcements.
Manje, we'll eject you and bring in Mark Katsaura here.
Oh, wow, I would have loved. Anyway, you guys can find me online at Chris Charamba. Please follow the podcast on Politics and Beyond on Facebook and Polly and Beyond ZW on Twitter.
I remain your president, supreme leader, commander-in-chief, and first secretary, is it? Yes, first secretary of politics and beyond. No one will usurp my authority. Wow. I am Upenyu Makoni. Yes, Chris. I am Upenyu Makoni everywhere.
I'm Henry Beattie. And remember, kutonga kwaro, gamba.